I'm so excited, and just right away off the bat, bringing in our first guest and our only guest here tonight. I'm so excited to have Max Armstrong on for an extended period of time. The legend, Max, how are you doing this evening?
John, you just made that sound like you were desperate. You know, you take anybody with a heartbeat tonight. I'm your only guest. Right?
Well, Steve Bertrand saw me in the hallway earlier, and he said on Lisa's show that I was just begging people to come on. No, I've cleared the way for you, Max. And I want to ask you a blunt question just right off the bat. 2022 is shaping up to be the hardest year for American farmers since blank.
Well, it depends, you know, various sectors of American agriculture, but I would say the way this one is shaping up, and there are a lot of people drawing comparisons with 2012, which was a famous drought year, and we're not there yet. We are not there at this point, and obviously the market indicated that today. As Mr. Jennings pointed out a few minutes ago, we saw grain prices fall today on the expectation, really, that temperatures are going to moderate. This intense heat isn't holding here. We're looking at still pretty decent corn and soybean crops. However, there are some farmers who are missing rains, and they're feeling this heat, and they're seeing the deterioration of the plants in their fields, and they're saying, this has a feel something like 2012. But there's much more to the picture now, as you know, and inflation is a part of that, including the cost of diesel fuel that you alluded.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Obviously, weather has got to be the biggest factor for farmers, and correct me if I'm wrong there, but coupling it with inflation and diesel and the uncertainty of the markets, I imagine that just adds to a general concern amongst our farmers, and that trickles down to all of us.
The input costs are very concerning to farmers right now. Everything that they need to plant these crops this year, to produce them, to grow them to maturity, and then to harvest them in the fall, everything from the seed to the fertilizer to the crop protection and chemicals and certainly to the fuel, all of these prices have gone up. The rental cost of the land that the farmers are farming, that cash rental rate is elevated as well. All of this is plugged into the equation, and they have to offset that with commodity prices. And, you know, that's the good side right now. These commodity prices are, in fact, elevated enough, at least in most instances, to cover the cost of producing the crop.
312-981-7200 if you've got questions for Max Armstrong. I got a lot more. We're just getting started. We've got to take a quick look at weather and traffic, though, with Mary Vandeveld. Ag business reporter Max Armstrong on the line. Max, I wanted to ask you, you know, we've been reading so many stories about the plummeting water levels of Lake Mead and what's happening out in the western United States. And I think we have a little bit of a bury our heads in the sand here. That's not our problem in the Midwest. But I imagine just like every market, these things all are interconnected. Are there any concerns that Chicagoans or people in the Midwest have about what's happening in the western part of our United States?
Well, you have to remember, John, how much of our produce comes out of California. And much of that crop has to be irrigated. Those fruits and vegetable crops out there, the tree nuts as well. And that water, the farmers are competing with recreation. You know, the folks out on Lake Mead that are putting their boats out there, competing also for the wildlife. In some instances, farmers have lost the rights to water because of the protection of some kind of a species in one of the rivers of the West. So with those levels dropping, and of course, then the metropolitan areas, first and foremost, they are competing with the water with the farmers, too. So what has happened is a lot of acreage has been taken out of production. I know almond growers, for example, in California, who bulldozed out trees. They can't produce the crop because they don't have the water there. So, yes, there are ramifications to that drought that continues in the western part of the country.
I know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we had drought conditions recently. I think that they had abated somewhat. And I read somewhere, but they can come back pretty quickly. I guess what I'm asking is well, we may have had some recent rains. How quickly can a drought form? I don't know. I know that's a silly question, but how quickly can something go from, we're doing okay, to, oh boy, this is trouble. Does it take a month, 2 months of no rain? How quickly can that change?
Well, it depends on the deficit going into that corrective measure, I guess I would say. Mr. Skilling and others could weigh in on this maybe a little better than I, but actually, the snowpack in the mountains of the West is just amazingly crucial. You know, if they get good snows in the winter up there, that's kind of the trickle down that provides the water for many of these crops in California. So Snows in the wintertime are huge. If you happen to get a good snowpack of the winter, that can make all the difference of night and day. You're not going to turn around, though, this long-term drought overnight. This is a multi-year event out there, John. So I guess to answer your question, even if it were to start raining now, it might improve, indeed, the topsoil moisture and the ability to do some additional irrigating. But this thing has a long tail the way it's going right now.
312-981-7200. Questions for Max. We got one from Steve. Oh, and I just hung up the phone on Max already, and I forgot to lock in our wonderful guest. Steve, I got you on the line. I'm going to get Max to join us, too, in a second, Steve, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just all you right now. 312-981-7200 if you've got any other ones. I always forget to tell Iridian to lock in the guest number. Why don't you go ahead and get Max on the line too right now, Iridian, and we'll go ahead and get them on. And let's lock in Steve as well. And this is exciting radio here, folks, as we make sure that both guests get on the line at the same time. Some pretty important technology here. I'm going to bring in Max. We'll lock in Max. This is great radio. And now I got Steve. We got everyone together on one phone line. Go ahead, Steve. Sorry about that, Max.
Hey, Max, we really appreciate your insight. I had a quick question about subsidies with the federal government. Because of what's going on around the world, does the government incent the farmers to grow more or produce more? Thanks, Max.
Complex, very complex issue of subsidies. Every country around the world does subsidize agriculture to some extent. And we've seen very significant increases in payments to the agriculture sector, of course, since the pandemic. And there was good reason for it. But payments have been elevated, and quite often payments increase in response to these weather events, such as a drought. That's a big debate right now as we write a new farm bill, the long-term legislation that guides agriculture policy in this country. Should we just rely heavily on crop insurance, which is subsidized? Crop insurance is subsidized by the federal government. The farmer buys it, purchases the policy. Uncle Sam helps make that price a little bit lower for the crop insurance. Or do we just have these ad hoc disaster bills that Congress passes every time we have a drought or a hurricane or fires in the plain states? That's a matter of debate right now at the national level, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and the farm bill is every 5 years, right? They redo it, and next year it comes up.
John, that's a very good point. Yeah, it's usually 5 years. There
okay.
are 10 years, but it's been extended. There have been four-year farm bills. Back in the 80s, when we were in the midst of the big ag crisis, there was one farm bill that weighed 10 pounds. It was such an extensive document, and farmers were in so much trouble that the government was coming up with all kinds of programs. You know, it's not an easy answer. It's a right farm policy for the country, as diverse as agriculture is across this country.
Do farmers live and die by the diesel prices like we do? I mean, I know obviously probably more because of the machines. I guess what I'm asking is, do they have contracts where they can purchase, diesel at a set price like some of the airline companies do? Or are they pretty much living day by day and they fill up at pumps similar to the way we do, too, with their big equipment?
Your question is a very good one, and I think more farmers are going to be looking at how they can manage this particular risk in their operation. There are co-ops, farmers banded together many years ago in cooperatives to do collectively what they couldn't do individually. And the co-ops, indeed, very aggressively try to hedge their risk. But I think more and more farmers are going to be looking at this. Instead of just buying their diesel fuel maybe around Valentine's Day that they're going to need for the growing season ahead, I think many of them are going to be working even closer with a firm that will consult with them, just as firms do on the marketing of their crops. More and more growers, I think, will be doing this. Some farmers that I know are even taking a look at expanding their fertilizer on-farm storage, just as they have expanded their storage for their crops, simply because it allows them to a little bit better manage the risk that comes with these spikes and troughs, all of the variations, the variability in the prices of the crop inputs.
We were talking, Lisa was talking about corn sweat, which is a term I thought I had heard about, but I didn't quite know. You tell me that with all the corn that we plant here in Illinois and across the Midwest, that has a direct impact on the humidity levels? That might be another skilling question, Max, but I'm just curious your knowledge base on that.
Yeah, we are exactly right. And Tommy has talked about this for years. This is nothing new. Some of the research, I think, was done actually at Northern Illinois University years ago. And And Tom has talked about this so much that we do have this elevated crop humidity as the plants are giving up moisture at the same time. You know, the crops out there do many things. And those fields, we can't forget about the fact that these fields actually host a lot of carbon. You know, and this is something that we're looking at. Can farmers be better compensated for the carbon sink they have out there that is helping take care of some of these environmental concerns we have? And look for that to really grow. Right now, these companies that are trying to sign up farmers aren't offering enough money for it to really make sense, generally speaking. But maybe somewhere down the road, that will soon change.
Oh, you mean that since they are a carbon absorber and a big one at that, pay them to grow certain things or certain ways to absorb more carbon out of the atmosphere?
Absolutely. Many farmers are already doing that. They have been for years. Many of them are growing cover crops out there,
Right. Protecting
the soil, planting their income crops into that cover crop. And that is a contributor to helping us fight all this degradation of the atmosphere. And so farmers are saying, okay, try to find a way to compensate us for this. And many companies that have to lay off their environmental risks are looking at trying to compensate farmers in some way to sign them up so that they can, in fact, take care of that environmental liability that they have in corporate America.
I swear, Max, every person out there should take an agriculture class. And I went to the great University of Illinois, an agriculture school, and I looked at the Moro plots and made fun of the fact that they were there right in the middle of the quad. And I should have learned a little bit more and taken a class, Max, about this stuff. This is important for all Americans to know.
You know, it really is, and it's so complex. However, you know, basically, what's good for the farmer? And this gets missed a lot in the discussion, I think. What's good for the farmer ultimately is good for the consumer, because if he or she is able to produce and produce in abundance, that serves us all well. And that's why we need to be a little bit concerned about regulation, about laws that hamstring farmers, laws that tax them inordinately, because ultimately that does come back to affect the ability of family farms to stay in business. And that's one of the biggest misunderstandings of agriculture, is that corporate America is taking over farms. Well, that wasn't true 20 years ago, and it still isn't. 98% of the farms in this country are family-owned and operated. They may be large enterprises in many instances, but quite often it's that father and mother and son and daughter in DeKalb County, Illinois, that sit around the breakfast table. Their business meeting is around that kitchen table in many instances, and they may have incorporated in all purposes for their business, but it's still a family-owned and operated enterprise.
For sure. 312-981-7200. If you've got more questions, a break, then the news, then a little bit more with Max Armstrong after this on Your Money Matters. John Hanson here on Your Money Matters, 640, continuing our conversation with the great Max Armstrong. And Max, you heard David Jennings talking about Kellogg, obviously a huge company and roots, of course, in Michigan, 116 years, and splitting off into three companies. And doesn't mean a huge boon to Chicago, but maybe a morale boost after we've lost a couple big names recently.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, who would have ever thought Caterpillar would have taken its corporate headquarters to Texas? Of course, Boeing was, you know, they were here for quite a few years, but they've had a very large presence anyway in the Washington, D.C. area, so it made sense for them to move offices, I think, there. There's, you know, another very significant one that's moving out of the immediate Chicago area, and the CNH company, which has long had a presence in Burr Ridge, or what used to be Hinsdale. They're moving their engineering center out of the Chicago area. I think before the pandemic, some 400 people worked there designing and engineering farm equipment. I'm not sure where that will go, but it was just announced last week. In fact, the village of Burr Ridge made the announcement that 100-plus acres will go onto the market out there, which has roots in the ag industry going back more than 100 years. International Harvester tested tractors out there more than 100 years ago.
Yeah, and you know Kellogg is a staple company when you look at their stock symbol and it's just one letter. That's when you know that they've been around a while.
Yeah, but you know what? I can't get my darn Rice Krispies. I can't find them. You know, I wind up going to five or six stores to find my darn Rice Krispies, John. And part of that relates to a strike they had earlier this year. That was part of the challenge, I think, in processing that product. But when you get right down to it, the cereal business isn't nearly as important to Kellogg as it used to be, because it's only some of the older folks that are still eating our Cheerios and Rice Krispies.
Yeah, it's a little bit different now. Things have changed. But I wanted to get your take on just one story I just kind of saw during the news break about ag companies really looking for people in the STEM fields. When you think of agriculture, those of us on the outside that should know more but don't, you think farmers, you think people that make farming equipment and the people that distribute the things that get farmed. But there's a lot of STEM technology related to farming, and companies are hiring right now for these positions.
Oh, you've hit the nail on the head there, John. So many of us, when we think of technology, think of all of the gadgets and gizmos up in the cab of the tractor. And they have, in fact, improved our ability to farm more efficiently and more environmentally friendly. But a lot of that technology is in the seed now. And that industry has roots right here. I mean, you think of the old DeKalb company and what they did back in the day. And then they were purchased by Monsanto. Monsanto now is Bayer. So there's long been a presence of this science-related side of agriculture here. Syngenta, for example, a big player in the ag crop production industry, has offices in Downers Grove, and they're building a new research center at Malta, west of DeKalb. You've got Bayer headquartered in St. Louis. Then there's some of these new companies coming along. There's one in St. Louis called New Leaf Symbiotics, and there's one I work with based in California, but with a presence in the Des Moines called the Pivot Bio, and they're all bringing science to the field to help farmers grow not only more efficiently, more productively, but more environmentally friendly, using less crop inputs to produce the crop.
The phone lines, of course, Max, right when we were about to let you go, are lighting up. Could I keep you for another couple of minutes? Would that be okay?
Hang on. All right. Supper can wait.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I got questions on the text line. I got questions on the phone line. Yeah, well, we got them. We'll keep them. And this turned into a whole agriculture day here on Your Money Matters. And Max, every single person I told today that I said that you were going to come on the program today followed it up with a squeal and an I love Max Armstrong. So you're well loved.
You know, I have quite a few relatives in the WGN listening area.
No, I mean, everyone. Mary Vandeveld just said to make sure I said hi. Lisa Dent before. And
Tell Max I said hi, too.
There you go. David does it himself. We got everybody.
Oh, I got a question, Max.
Oh, go ahead, David.
Yes, David.
Farm equipment. How are farmers doing with the ability, now that everything is digital or computerized, getting the ability to work on their own stuff and not be at the mercy of the company they bought it from to get help when something goes wrong?
Interesting, like the software stuff and everything. Max?
Well, not just the software, but also the hardware.
Okay.
Yeah, well, most of it is indeed software. There's a lot of technology in there that farmers, in many instances, simply do not have the ability to repair, or if they try to, it takes that equipment into another area and takes the company into an area of liability that they need to be concerned about. So, yeah, it's a hot-button issue with some in agriculture, to be sure, but I understand the equipment company's position on this. You know, there's the complexity of the vehicle. That car that you drive now is not like the one that your dad tried to fix back in the day. And, there's both sides to this story, as is often the case in food and agriculture issues, as you know.
For sure. Good question, David. Let's go to the phone lines. Carrie. Hey, Carrie, you're on WGN.
Hey, John. Hey, Max. Pleasure to speak with both of you guys.
I'm out
in Sycamore. I'm not a farmer, but living out here, you kind of absorb it. So for Max, I have a question for you. With the national labor shortage for everything from, you know, lifeguards to fast food workers, farm work is backbreaking labor. Are you seeing, you know, labor shortages, and how do they get farmhands, and is that going to affect things in the future?
Great question.
Oh, you've hit on a key issue, and it's a hot button one. There was a news conference in Indianapolis today about this very subject, and specifically the folks in animal agriculture. The immigration changes to allow for guest workers coming in from another country. You know, it's worked reasonably well for the seasonal produce farmers. I mean, they've refined this and refined it and tried to improve it over the years. But for those who need the workforce the year round, and I'm talking about dairy farms, They need to help milking cows. I'm talking about the poultry operations, like the big duck farms over in northern Indiana, the big dairy farms in northwestern Indiana. They need these workers year-round, and immigration policy has been a real problem for that.
Right. Because, obviously we've had COVID, obviously, threw a wrench in immigration as well. In addition to it, such this political hot-button issue right now, this hot potato that no one seems to want to tackle. I mean, I think that if you were to ask most farmers, and I know you've talked to them, are most for more pathways for legal citizenship to get more labor into the country for farming?
I think all of them would say the pathway to legal citizenship. Those who are coming across the border legally, I think a lot of farmers would say, hey, we need to certainly have regulation about who's coming into this country,
right.
But we need to be able to tap that workforce for people who do not, to replace the people in this country who won't take those jobs. These are hardworking folks who are taking the jobs out of the field and in these livestock operations.
Yeah. Kerry, it was a great question.
No, great answer, and as long as it's all legal, we need to feed people. So that's where I was going to. So let's get it done.
All right, hey, me, Kerry, and Max, we'll go to Washington D.C. We'll solve all the problems. All right, Max,
there
I got a question from the text line. The 217 wanted me to ask you, what are those very tiny black bugs that bite when the beans harvest start?
Well, we've got a bunch of pests, Rick, all through the growing season, and many of those came in from another country. There's a new one they're concerned about in vineyards now. It's the heck they call that thing? It's a leaf hopper, and that's now in 11 states. Well, it came in from China 10 years ago, and they're worried about it because it can suck the sap out of the leaves. So that's why when you come into O'Hare, the inspectors there say, have you been on a farm? Do you have any fruits or vegetables with you? I've been out there with them on many occasions watching as the inspection takes place, and it's so crucial to protect our domestic food supply.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we got about another minute or two left. I just kind of wanted to sum it all up. We started at the beginning talking about how tough of a year it has been, and we talked about potential drought conditions, heat conditions, what we're looking at. But just generally speaking, the biggest concern for farmers right now, obviously, what's happening with the weather, diesel prices, and what are we looking at broadly as a kind of a wrap-up here, Max?
Well, I think, we need to be concerned about the supply of crops. Our wheat crop in the United States being harvested right now is terrible. I mean, 53% of it is in poor or very poor condition. So we need to watch what's happening around the globe, especially with all of that wheat that is not on the market, not coming onto the market from Russia and Ukraine, and probably won't anytime soon because of all of those harbors being mined over there and the difficulty of getting to that crop. So that's sitting there with the inability to access it. We have a major report coming up from the government on Friday, I guess it is, of next week, that will shed some light on the size of the crop Thursday of next week, 30th. So we'll have a little better handle on our acreage in the United States this year and the potential for crop size.
Well, Maxie,
it's still early.
Yeah.
It's very early in the game.
Yeah, for sure. Max, it's not early in your time to eat supper. I'm sorry I kept you so long here on what became Agriculture Day on Your Money Matters, but I hope you'll come back and do it again, all right?
I'd love to. It's an honor to be on with you. You ask great questions always, John.
I appreciate that. Our listeners do the better asking. Max Armstrong, the legend, of course, always appreciate his input. And I just think it's so good to have an expert like him on to this sector that a lot of us don't understand, and it impacts us all so much. It's like one of the great things about having Lisa chat so much about farming as well is because she brings such an interesting perspective to that. And I think it's something we all need. And if I can just educate people, including myself, a little bit more, well, I feel like I did my job today. So Max Armstrong, we'll have him on hopefully next month to talk more ag business stuff.